Welcome to a new edition of The Brand Called You. Today I have a very, very exciting individual who has been a venture capitalist, a serial entrepreneur, and has one of the most incredible qualifications. Jaideep Singh, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Jaideep is a BS and MS in computer engineering. He's an MBA from Wharton School. He's a serial entrepreneur and he's a venture capitalist to early stage entrepreneurs at an idea stage. Jaideep, tell me a little bit about your early career and some of your learnings.
Well, my earliest career started in college. Mm-hmm. My dad was based in Europe for a few years during the final years of my high school.
Okay.
And the intent was, he was a government guy, he was a military guy. So the intent was to come back to India because mm-hmm. He couldn't afford to send me anywhere for school, for college. But I really wanted to go to the States for college. And when he asked me why, he said, India has great colleges too. Mm-hmm. At that age, I wanted to be in America, in American colleges. So he said, well, if you want to go, you got to find your own way. I have 1 lakh rupees. Mm-hmm. It's all I can spare because I need to build a house. I don't have my own house and I'm going to retire in 3 or 4 years. So it started there. I went from, in high school, someone who was playing bridge for 8 hours a day and wow. studying on the side to suddenly trying to figure out how to pay for college tuition and food and board. Mm-hmm. So that's where it started. And I did all kinds of odd jobs, from cleaning toilets to flipping burgers to becoming a waiter mm-hmm. at a restaurant, which I found was even more lucrative than being a programmer.
Amazing.
So it was 4 years of college of doing all kinds of work. And within the first year, I had programming skills. I was programming and waiting tables. So mm-hmm. I would say that was the start of my
And did you career. Work after your MS?
Yes.
Doing an MBA?
Yes. So the interesting thing is, even during your master's, you're actually working. Correct. The U.S. has such a fantastic system. I was a research assistant, so they not only paid for my tuition, they gave me $1,500 a month mm-hmm. of stipend. Right, which back then in Arizona was
a lot of money.
Correct. Right, my expenses were only $400 or $500. So, but when I was there, I realized that the smartest guys who were even coming from India, because at the graduate school level, these schools attract all the top IT computer science guys, mm-hmm. and from not just from India, from Israel and Europe and everywhere, everyone's going to Silicon Valley. Mm-hmm. And as a young guy who was a little bit enterprising, that seemed really exciting Correct. To me. So I ended up in Silicon Valley. And I ended up working, my research area was in operating systems in the computer science area, and I ended up working for an operating system company. And I was fortunate, I joined a company that was very small, 100 people, and 7 years later I grew with them, and the company was 4,000 or 5,000 people, it was 7 billion market cap, had gone public.
Which company was this?
It's a company called Wind River okay. Systems.
Yeah.
And I went from junior engineer to reporting directly to the CEO right before I left. Mm-hmm. And sort of learned everything from building products to marketing, distributing products.
Terrific.
And but at that juncture, I realized that a lot of the language of business was still foreign to me. Mm-hmm. When people talk about credit and debit, I actually didn't understand what it meant, right? I never studied it. Now, of course, you can pick up a few books, but I realized that I'd made a little bit of money and it was a good time to maybe take a break. I was still single. And I took a break and went back to business school. Mm-hmm. At the Wharton School. And my entire intent by then, I also had a green card, mm-hmm. which meant I could work freely anywhere.
Correct.
So my entire intent was to start a company. Mm-hmm. And I had a co-founder of mine, another Indian guy, Jay Bhatti, mm-hmm. and we spent our entire 2 years ideating on concepts. I didn't even, do a single job interview on campus, which is rare for MBAs. Mm-hmm. But the dot-com had just crashed. I started business school in 2000.
Correct.
I graduated in 02. And we went up and down Sand Hill Road in California to raise money, and everyone said no.
Yep. Yeah. I lost a lot of money in the dot-com.
So meanwhile, whatever money I'd made prior to business school, I lost most of it during that as well, because I didn't know what I was doing with stocks, really. We had no clue. But going up and down Sand Hill Road made me realize that a number of these firms, VC firms, were actually interested in hiring me. Mm-hmm. because I was a deep tech guy. A lot of them were consumer guys from accounting or other backgrounds, and they needed tech sort of VCs. Mm-hmm. So I ended up becoming a VC.
Okay.
Even before I became an entrepreneur.
I see. So tell me, you know, the world of VCs mm-hmm. is a very different world.
It is.
You know, I've often said that a VC has to be a great listener, has to keep on analyzing. But from the company which is looking for money, they're painfully slow.
Yeah.
Because they're probably looking at hundreds and hundreds of different opportunities.
Yep.
They've got to make two or three investments.
Yeah.
How does a potential investee reconcile the speed at which you move?
So I think that is true. Venture capital is about assessing people and a lot of analysis, right? And mostly VCs are looking at a concept they don't know nothing about. So it takes a while to get up to speed.
Yep.
They're speaking to their advisors. So I think as an entrepreneur, I guess I learned this early because I did VC before I became an entrepreneur. So yep. I understood the VC mindset. It's important to engage with multiple VCs, first of all. Right at the get-go. Even before you have finalized your idea, right? What ends up happening is mostly you come up with an idea with your college classmates or, you know, workmates, you go build a product, you have some traction, now you go to VCs, mm-hmm. right? I think you really missed out on a really important piece of the journey where the ideation and idea selection is occurring.
Correct.
And many times, your entrepreneurs, think about entrepreneurs, have a lot of spirit and gusto, but you're in a small well of information. Mm-hmm. You don't have a lot of information by definition, mm-hmm. right? Whereas VCs may not be deep, but they have a breadth of information. They're seeing a lot of deals mm-hmm. come through. So I think validation that you're on the right track and this idea is a good one is a really important thing to do even before you jump in it.
Wonderful.
Right.
So tell me, you know, you then founded businesses like CDoc, Spock, and some other other ventures.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about these, and then I'll come back to your VC.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first company I started at the VC firm I was at
okay.
Clearstone Ventures, and it was clear to me that I always wanted to be an entrepreneur. I saw being VC as a temporary journey. And after Google's IPO in 2004, the market for consumer internet was back in a big way. You know, for a few years, it was dead.
Yeah.
People were only doing enterprise and SaaS. You know. So with that, my buddy Jay kept calling me up. He was at Microsoft. Mm-hmm. He said, look, I work 2 hours a day and they promote me. You know, I can't take this anymore. We have to start a company. So we cycled through many ideas. Now, since I was at a VC shop, I had access to people. I was bouncing ideas every day. What do you think about this? What do you think about that? And of course, talking to VCs are also super skeptical.
Correct.
So you actually cannot listen to them. But were you looking for some signals and trying to eliminate the noise, yeah. which is 90% noise.
Yeah.
So we came up with an idea for Spock, mm-hmm. like the Star Trek character, which is a vertical search engine, right? If I searched for Ashutosh Garg on Google, I got lots of results and lots of Ashutosh Gargs in India
yeah.
or in the world,
yeah.
right? But if I wanted to find this Ashutosh Garg, look at his background. This is before you had a Wikipedia mm-hmm. page. Mm-hmm. Right, figure out where you are on LinkedIn, figure out where you're on Facebook, your blogs, the books you may have written. Mm-hmm. The idea we had was to aggregate all that information mm-hmm. and really give one picture of a person, mm-hmm. right? So you click that result and find all the related people. So wow. your brothers on the internet, your dad, your mom, kids,
everyone,
right? And you see Google's doing that mm-hmm. now, right? So we did that, we were the first to get out there. Mm-hmm. We built a really strong team. We had maybe 5-7 PhDs, 50-person engineering team from Stanford and MIT. So we built a really, there's a hard natural language processing problem and you need to do it at scale. Mm-hmm. And when we launched, there were maybe 2 or 3 venture-backed companies. Actually, when we started, by the time we launched, there were 7 or 8 venture-backed companies mm-hmm. in the space. But we built a really strong team. We did a great job. And within the year of launch, we became really number one in that space.
Okay. Right?
And the product market fit was there from day one. Day one, we had over 500,000 hits on our website. This is pre-mobile internet.
Yep.
This is, I'm talking about 2007, yep. right? we launched the same year the iPhone launched. So there was just a lot of traffic and a lot of scope for distribution and stuff like that. So we, you know, we had a really good run. But right as our company was doing this, the entire stock market was doing this for a second time, you know. So we raised a seed round of $1 million. We raised another $9 million in Series A. We had investment bank to raise $25 million and really seeing a lot of growth. But that happened at the end of 2008 and the market fell down below us. But since I'd seen this movie before, I had this premonition. I started playing the field to open up doors for M&A as well. So back then, there was a lot of interest from Microsoft. Satya Nadella was running Bing, and we met him multiple times, and he had serious interest in acquiring the company. We, you know, it was, there were a few other search engines, other people who wanted to buy, and about $100 million was sort of the initial term sheet that we got on paper, right? But from late 08 to February 09, when we actually signed a term sheet, the market fell off even further. Right. Everyone froze M&A, people were laying off employees. And but we got acquired. We still had multiple term sheets, so we ended up selling for maybe like $20 million or so. You know, which was not such a great outcome, but it was still, for the time, it was a decent outcome.
It was good cash at that time.
Yeah. So that was the end of the chapter for my first company. I had to stay another year with the acquiring company as part of the integration plan. But as soon as that was over, I was looking around, and you know, my parents live in Noida, so I'm from the Delhi area. And I had two tiny kids, two boys. One was newborn, one was, you know, 2-3 years old. And I felt like this was a good time to come explore India. So that journey turned and brought me to India. And but this was, I'm talking about 2010. Unfortunately, when I looked at the tech industry closely back then, Flipkart was already clearly breaking out. But there was only 4 or 5 million internet users in India. There were only 4 or 5 million broadband connections. They said there were 25 million internet users, but that's all nonsense, you know. So I thought about it, and it's hard to make a big scalable business on such a small base. Obviously, you could see it growing, but when was it going to happen? I wasn't sure. So I decided not to do a tech based business. I ended up focusing on renewable energy. And I spent a year with two other guys, and we co-founded a company called Orange Renewables. So I'll cut that story short. I ended up leaving in a year. The company actually did well. It sold for 6,000 crores last year. And then after that, in 2015, the tech market seemed to be growing now, right? So that's when I started CDoc, which is another consumer play for telemedicine. But that business did not work. I think it was a good idea, but we were maybe 4 or 5 years too early with that idea.
Actually, telemedicine is something that has been debated in India for the last 15 years. From the time of the VSATs. And it still hasn't taken off.
It has. By the way, telemedicine started in the late 90s in the US as well. But it took until the early, I would say 2015, 20, around the time we were starting CDoc was time telemedicine actually started taking off in the US. So it's definitely an area where the behavioral change took 10, 15 years. You see, and what we underestimated was that you have a relationship with your doctor, and it's a hard relationship to break. Unlike Ola and Uber, where you actually don't care who's driving the car. One taxi is as good as the other, but one doctor is not as good as the other. Right? And that's where the real friction lies. And we underestimated that friction when we started the company.
So let's now move to your VC, Avtar. You know, let me start by asking you that, you know, what is the difference between early stage and seed stage? And I'm, this question is for the thousands of people who will be listening to you talk.
You know, it's all nomenclature. When I was doing venture capital in California, seed stage meant Series A. Okay. Now there's two other rounds before a Series A. So it's actually a third round, a Series A, right? You have a seed stage, pre-Series A, and then an A.
And again, for our listeners and viewers, how would this whole concept of angel fit in?
Yes.
Between seed and early.
Right. So typically, the way the nomenclature started in the US, the angel round was your
first round.
First round.
Correct.
So that would usually be called a Series A. Mm-hmm. And then if you went for a VC round after that, that was a B. Mm-hmm. And then the letters went up from there.
Yeah.
Now it's changed even in the US, it's not just in India. You have an angel round.
Yeah.
When you talk to a VC first institutional round, that is a seed round. $500,000 or so. Mm-hmm. It's defined by the size also.
Yeah.
Because you can bypass rungs and go straight for a Series A if you have a lot of traction.
Correct.
So you have that seed round. Then there's something called a pre-Series A round. Correct. Which, by the way, I didn't even understand this till 6 months ago myself. Mm-hmm. That how much the industry had changed. That is a little bit more money. And then a Series A. So you look at it, you got one, two, three rounds before you get to a Series A, right? And as a result, you're seeing Series A of $100 million. It used to be Series A was never more than $2 or $3 million. Absolutely. Five.
Yeah.
When I did Spock, we did I was one of the early guys to call my first round a seed and a Series S. Mm-hmm. And my lawyer didn't want me to do it, but I said, nah, tum Series S, he dalo is skin there. Because I don't want to be raising a B. It is a psychological pushback. So anyway, so these are the various rounds.
Okay. So let's talk about you wearing your VC hat and looking at startups. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of people are looking at startups or are startup entrepreneurs. Let me start with, and again, you've met hundreds of startup entrepreneurs, I'm sure, over the years. Let me start with asking you, from your perspective, should a startup entrepreneur go solo or should he or she have a co-founder?
You know, it all depends on your personality. Really, it's a very individual thing. Some people, and I have friends like this, so let me tell you what most VCs would say. Mm-hmm. Most VCs would say have a co-founder. But I've seen both of them work. Mm-hmm. I've seen companies where four co-founders starting together. Mm-hmm. Usually when you have four, there's a lot more fighting.
Correct.
Okay. But if you have one strong guy who can get everyone, shut the noise down and get to decisions, it can work well, mm-hmm. you know. And it can blow up also. One is a tough place to be because doing a startup is a tough thing.
Correct.
Right? But if you have good advisors and if you're a pretty strong person yourself and a good listener to your advisors, you could do it.
Okay.
I would say if you have to draw a bell curve, right? Two standard deviations from that bell curve ought to be two founders.
Yeah.
And beyond two standard deviations on one side, you'll see one founder, and then more than one would be.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So, you know, again, based on your own experience, what are some of the big mistakes a lot of startup founders make?
I think there's a few really big ones that I see over and over again. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm right now incubating companies, mm-hmm. right? I don't have a venture capital shop. I'm just doing it through people that I know, right? And I fell into it in the following way. There are a lot of smart kids, a lot of smart, not just kids, mid-cycle engineers mostly, or businessmen who have built products, have been involved in technology, really want to do something badly, and they have an idea, right? And picking the right idea, you know, VC-based technology business is a very, very weird business, okay? Because if you look at all the possible concepts, VC only works on maybe 1 or 2% of those concepts, of those tech concepts. The reason is that you need to have extraordinary growth. Not over the cycle of the company, but out of the gate.
Correct.
That is the formula to solve for. How, if you have to look at it as an engineer, the formula says, how do I, this will be a big market, but I need to get out of the gate really, really fast, right? Until then, there's no capital available. That's the only way to attract capital. So that's really what you're solving for. And this is this point is more important than everything else, because everything else is noise relative to this. But there's so much information about how to start a company, how to go about things, what's a good idea. So early stage entrepreneurs miss this a lot. Mm-hmm. So they come up with an idea, which is a good problem, worth solving, but it won't be venture backable, right? So I would say that's where 90-95% of the concepts sit.
Okay. Yeah. And one more question on startups before I ask you some questions personally. I see a lot of startups grappling with when they should start scaling up.
Yeah.
Some people I've spoken to say they should start scaling up from day one. Others say not till they have got a business plan, you know, proven.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts?
Well, my thoughts actually echo that of the entire VC industry. So I have nothing unique to say here, because now this problem is really well understood.
Yeah.
And I think it's people have understood it for many years and describe it differently, but sometimes someone coins a phrase, you know? And I think it was Mark Andreessen who coined the phrase of product market fit, right? And I think that's a really, really good expression, very good moniker to describe exactly when you should start scaling. Product market fit is when I produce a product that not just you, him, multiple people actually want it, right? And they're coming and seeking it out.
Yeah.
As opposed to you just burning cash and pushing that product on people.
Correct.
So as soon as you have that, you could technically start scaling, but scaling in tech usually means you need to go raise a lot of money.
I see.
So you then need to convince people that product market fit has happened.
Correct.
Not just use the term product market fit. You have to prove it.
Correct.
And that's when you should start scaling.
So, Jaideep, a few questions for you personally. Over the years, have you had any mentors? And if so, what have been some of your learnings?
You know, it's a really good question. I've worked with lots of people that I've learned from. But I would say there wasn't like one mentor who really drove it for me. I would say the people who most influenced my thinking were probably my dad, who, when I was growing up, spent a lot of time with me. He was a fighter pilot. I was an engineer. But when I look back, it turns out that he was more of an engineer than even a fighter pilot. He understood. He's 85 years old today. But if you ask him Newton's laws, he can just tell you, you know, without even batting an eyelid.
Yeah.
He's teaching my grandchildren all this stuff, right? So it wasn't that he taught me Newton's law. I think he pushed me hard to think fundamentally about things. And I think that really shaped my thinking. And maybe because he was a fighter pilot who was used to risk taking, he always encouraged me to take risks. He could have said, no, don't go to America. You're not going. We don't have the money. But he said, hey, if you really want to go,
go.
Just go, you know. Or you want to study, you know, whatever it was. A lot of parents don't want their kids to leave high-paying jobs and start a company.
Yeah.
He said, why not? Yeah. Just do it, you know. So I think that was, he was probably the biggest mentor in my life.
Wonderful. So my next question to you is, when was the last time you did something for the first time?
You know, there's an American holiday called Thanksgiving, and I was at a friend's house here in Delhi. We were having a Thanksgiving party, and they decided to play poker, right? Now, in the past, I've, when people say we're going to play poker, I don't know how to play poker, and I don't want to invest.
But you can keep a straight face.
I can keep a straight face. Okay. Yeah, I play teen pati.
Okay.
So I do understand the concept, and I guess poker is a more complex teen pati. But we had a lot to drink, and this poker game started maybe at pretty late after I could, where I was already stuttering. So I figured that, okay, I'm just going to lose some money. But it turns out that it was great. We only played it for an hour, hour and a half, but I learned something from the, from that. And I learned that this game is, it's not that I won or played well, but I was just observing the participants, and I learned that this is a game that's all about patience.
Correct.
And making no sudden moves, which is interesting. So I think when I get some free time, I would like to learn poker. I think it'd be really interesting.
Wonderful. Yeah. So my last question to you, you know, And this is a question I ask every single guest who I talk to, and it's on failure.
Yeah.
You know, Indian parents, particularly, I think Asian parents in general, do not teach children how important it is to accept that failure is fine. We've all failed at multiple things in our lives.
Yep.
What have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes or failures?
Well, I've had a lot. So I think it started off in high school. Mm-hmm. I was off the track, not studying. I finally got my act together right before the SATs and the, you know, the thing, and I was able to scrape through and get into a decent, get a scholarship and all, but it was just scraping through. Mm-hmm. And I realized when I got into the computer engineering, computer science program that I'm gonna have to change this.
Okay.
I can't, you know, it's really competitive now. You cannot wing it at the last minute. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a failure very early on. Okay. That's held me in good stead. And I can still procrastinate, but I can see that now's the time to start getting serious,
okay.
You know.
Okay.
Also, I think with CDoc, I was pretty humbled. Mm-hmm. I'd had a few successes back to back, because even as a VC, I was fairly successful at seed-funded companies that went public and got acquired, you know, had over $1.5 billion of exits. Mm-hmm. I realized that, wow, we got this one really wrong. Mm-hmm. And we got it wrong when a lot of really smart people told us, don't do it. Mm-hmm. I actually went out, spoke to people before I started CDoc. Mm-hmm. And a lot of VCs had seen telemedicine before. And I figured that we knew better, and we didn't. Mm-hmm. So I think you have to be skeptical of skeptics, mm-hmm. but you also have to be able to tell when there's signal coming in and not noise. So I think it's really important to do that. So that was humbling.
Wonderful. Jerry, thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure speaking to you. Good luck with all your new ventures.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Brand Called You podcast. Be sure to visit tbcy.in to join the conversation, access show notes, and discover fantastic bonus content. You can follow us on YouTube, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Simply search for The Brand Called You. Thank you, and see you next week.